Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard. Bruce, what's going on, man? How are you?
Sometimes Jimmy Jam came along. Those were the best times. Now they're gone. How can you get any better than I am right now? I don't know. It would damn near be impossible. Because I did that, I was multilingual talented on that. Didn't know that about me, did you?
I did not know that about you, but I'm glad to learn, and I am excited for our show today. Our topic is Mick what? Foley. Mick just had a birthday a couple of days ago, and it's probably one of our most requested episodes for us to do an episode on Mick Foley.
Have we done an episode on Mick Foley?
No, we've talked a lot about the creation of character and the evolution and some of the moments, but not really a traditional profile show. So we're finally doing it today. And I don't know that you and I ever talked about when was he first on your radar? I mean, did you see him in World Class first or where?
I want to say World Class or there's a guy named Joel Goodhart that had shows that Mick worked on. I saw him there. What impressed me about Mick was his size and his ability to move for a big man. I thought he was very impressive in his work. The one thing that we didn't like was how crazy he was and the bumps he would take, unnecessary bumps that he would take. So from the time that I first saw Cactus Jack, I was a fan. I liked the look. I liked the way that he worked. I liked when I finally got to hear him cut promos. I liked those as well because they were different. So I don't know if it was, I know he worked World Class. I saw him in World Class, liked him in World Class, working with my old friend Gary Young. And so, yeah, I mean, pretty much from love at first sight.
I think in World Class, he was still using the name Cactus Jack Manson. What'd you think about that? Leaning into that last name, Cactus Jack Manson.
He looked like a Cactus Jack Manson, for God's sakes. Really and truly, if you didn't call him Jack Manson, I mean, to me, that made sense. And you want to make the correlation? You could. But to me, I thought it worked.
He, of course, was through a lot of the territories, working Memphis for Bill Watts in the UWF for World Class. And he starts to get a little bit of buzz. And we even see him very early on, even before you were there, working as an enhancement talent for the Bulldogs. Maybe not his most fun match. I think he wound up leaving with a broken jaw that night. Did you ever see that match with Jack Foley in a tag team affair against the British Bulldogs?
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, it was. It was god awful. The Bulldogs went out. Look, I don't know how many weeks that Cactus had been in the business at that time. I think I was there. I don't know.
It was like 85, I think. I think it predates even.
It was a train wreck, and Cactus didn't appear to know what the hell he was doing by any stretch of the imaginations. And the Bulldogs simply took advantage of that and beat the hell out of him.
When you think back to his territory days, before he's a star, before he's on WCW television, before he's in the WWF or ECW, did you think that there was any chance that a guy like that could make it with Vince McMahon's WWF? Because we've heard for so long that Vince had a certain taste for talent. He liked guys to look a certain way and wrestle a certain way. And well, he just didn't really fit in that traditional box. And we know he's going to overcome all of those sort of preconceived notions and achieve massive success there. But did you first, when you first really saw him perform, did you just assume, hey, man, he might be successful everywhere else, but
no,
that's not a New York act? Or did you think that could be possible?
Absolutely, it could be possible. You know, Hogan needed opponents. Your champions needed opponents. I looked at him as a great character heel and someone that could work with anybody and everybody. Didn't see him as a baby face at that time, though he had the characteristics of a baby face. He had that smile, the sick sadistic smile that in my opinion, I thought, well, hell it did, but could also be a babyface smile that people could really get behind. So, yeah, I think from day one, I saw him as somebody that could be in the WWE.
One of the first big breaks he gets is when he winds up on a Clash of the Champions for WCW. It's national television in prime time on TBS, but he's working with Mil Máscaras. And that at times could be. Probably pretty challenging for a young Mick Foley. And he's trying to, as JR would say, maybe maximize his minutes. He winds up taking a bump that I remember seeing when it happened. It blew my mind then. And the more I watch it, the more impressed and in awe I am. Shock and awe, maybe. The nasty plunge off the apron onto the concrete. I don't remember seeing a lot of stuff like that before. I mean, I'm sure it happened in territories. I know I've seen, you know, Bobby Eaton take bumps on the floor and things like that. But what do you think of that nasty plunge onto the concrete?
Let me ask you this question. You have a pool, right?
Yep.
Been in a lot of pools. Have you ever taken the nasty plunge in a pool?
I have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Off the diving board or just off the side?
Just off the side.
Okay. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I got it out of my system, but I don't think I've done it many times.
Well, and the question, did you enjoy it? Is that something like, oh, hey, wow, this was really almost as fun as when I saw it on TV?
No, that was
yeah, it sucks. It hurts.
It's not ideal. Yeah.
Yeah, I did it, man. I got up on the diving board one time and did it. And needless to say, I can remember it because I only did it one time.
And that was water.
And then that sucked.
Yeah.
Because I had nothing to, I'm fully committed. Trust fall. Yeah, I'm not doing that either. But it hurts. So yeah, to do that, man, and you're taking a bump off the apron to the floor, that is insanity. That's not, you know, that's not a creative deal of, oh, hey, wow, look at how great this is. That's just stupid. But get you noticed, I guess.
He started to get a little bit of a reputation because he worked some tours over in Japan. He has some big time matches in Philadelphia, as you mentioned, for Joel Goodhart. He even makes a couple of cameos with Global and Dallas. And he has his big break when he heads back to WCW, and he works with a lot of top talent like Sting and Ron Simmons and Vader. And his matches with Vader in particular were just brutal. In that era, I think I've heard you say before that sometimes, you know, you and some other guys might go over to Howard Finkel's and have some steak burgers and watch the WCW pay-per-views. What did you think of these Foley Cactus Jack matches at the time?
I think by the time Cactus was there, the steak burger days were over. But the unfortunate thing, like I said to Paul Heyman about ECW after their first pay-per-view, was that, all right, man, unfortunately, tonight you exposed your product. And in this case, Mick Foley, you know, was exposed and was on a large format. And it said to us that, ooh, wow, man, I don't want him doing those moves on my watch. And some of it, a lot of it was unnecessary. And I don't think that there was any thought or any, you know, and I know everybody's going to throw back in my face. You guys let him jump off the top of a cage. That was calculated, and that was as safe could be, but it was also calculated. It was laid out. It had safety precautions in there. But these were just Cactus doing things to get noticed. And that's where, you know, the feeling was okay, he's not, maybe not that bright, because he's just doing this stuff and he's taking years off of his career every time he takes one of those crazy bumps. And there was enough there, man. There was enough there with his personality, with the way that he worked for a large man, that he didn't necessarily need to take those bumps. Now, for his character, if he wanted to take a crazy bump every once in a while that was calculated and that was laid out and that was safe, then by all means, yes. But not every night and not as many as he was doing at the time.
He put himself through the paces in WCW, that's for sure. My man would wind up losing an ear, have major concussions. He was even booked to have a silly story where he had amnesia. He's overcoming.
Maybe it's just been a shoot.
Well, who knows?
Who knows?
According to his book, even though he's here in WCW, he's still calling and trying to talk to J.J. Dillon, and he's told the same thing every time. And I've heard from a lot of people that this was just sort of par for the course. You had to be persistent sometimes to get your shot with the WWF. And there would be that call.
You have to be persistent. And look, man, you have to be persistent in life.
That's right.
In general. Someone tells you no, and you know you can do it, and you really want to do it, and you want it that bad. Be persistent. Don't take no for an answer. Continue to go back. Find another way in. Change something about yourself that can help you get into what it is that you really desire and love and want to do. Have that drive within you and be persistent. So I say that is a life lesson to everybody, that if you really want something bad enough, do whatever it takes. Three kinds of people in this world: those that try, those that give the best shot, those that do whatever it takes. Guess which one succeeds?
I'm curious, in that era, what did it take to get, you know, a little bit of attention? Was it, hey, well, I'm going to send an 8x10. Hey, I'm going to send a tape. Hey, I'm just going to call. Hey, I'm going to handwrite a letter. Hey, I'm going to pitch an idea or a character. Like, what would you say would have been a best practice? Not now, but way back then.
A follow-up phone call.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, to pitching ideas, I'm not going to listen to you. Because you don't get hired, we do that idea, and then you're, oh my God, they stole my idea. Now, we steal ideas from people all the time. All right? You know, it's somebody came up with an idea, and they come in, I got this great idea, I want to do this, bing, bing, bing. That is an awesome idea. I'm not going to do it with you, I'm going to do it with somebody else. Hey, you know, tell them. But when they don't work for you, and I don't want to hear their idea.
I got you. Foley leaves WCW in 1994, and he bets on himself. He's coming off big matches with Vader. He had tag matches with Kevin Sullivan and the Nasty Boys. It's disappointing that they didn't do anything with the ear story. I haven't
really. That was given to him, too. That was something
right there. Like,
you got a guy walking around with no ear. And he's got the ear.
And he lost it in a match in your ring.
Yeah. And it's that one writes itself. Why not capitalize on it? And even if they didn't think that Cactus was a main event guy at that time, maybe this is something that could catapult people into caring about him and watching and want to see more. What other appendages are going to get ripped off of his body? And, you know, that's intriguing. But to not do it, I think that one was probably ill-advised, especially considering the opponents, you know, Vader and Mick. It just was, I thought that could have helped their program.
Hypothetically speaking, is that, I mean, I know that everybody talks about the Cactus Jack ear, but prior to that, was the biggest example of something like that Yukon Eric and Killer Kowalski from way back when?
For an ear, I guess, yeah. Killer Kowalski came off the top rope onto Yukon Eric with a knee, and when he caught him just right, his ear kind of came off. And look, man, it ain't ballet.
I love you. Just and real then visual. It kind of came off. I mean, his ear just kind of came off. It's no big deal.
That's really what it is. But imagine, you know, imagine the promos with the ear and just, oh, my ear. God, my ear, man, I can't hear. What is that? Did Vader say something? I can't hear you because I don't have an ear. My eye.
I totally get why.
Eye, an ear, a nose. It all works. My nose.
I wish we had a Blue Chew ad right now because you could say that for something else, but we'll keep it going. What was it about his work in ECW that, or was it just timing when he finally gets the opportunity to come in? Because he had some fun in ECW, but I'm just curious from your perspective, was it just everyone? I mean, because we've heard the stories that other people were really persistent about bringing him in. Finally, Vince acquiesced. And from your perspective, were you watching any of the ECW stuff? Did you like these promos he was doing and the work he was doing there?
I was the one bringing them to Vince. Loved them. I'm hardcore. I'm hardcore. And he's riding a little merry-go-round with four little boxes on it and things of that nature. It was psychologically tremendous. The promos were very, very sophisticated. Everything he said was true. And then was able to translate that into the ring. I'm hardcore. I'm going to hold on to this side lock for 22 minutes. And then I'm going to get up and I'm going to take him over again. Look, folks, Cactus sounded an awful lot like Terry Funk. Oh, Terry Funk. Okay. It's just in your mind. No. Okay. Well, that's Bruce's Terry, but it's also Mick. Because they were very similar in their delivery. I'm hardcore. Mick had a little bit more of a, but Terry is Terry, and Terry's who I love and adore, and Mick does too. So I'm sure Mick will approve of me doing Terry Funk as him. So yes, I think that the promos more than anything, and the ability to figure out how to take a hardened, calloused, cynical crowd in Philadelphia that loved this little niche of ECW, and they're hardcore and they hung on. By God, we're extreme. How do you get somebody like that to hate the most extreme guy that there was on the market in Cactus Jack? You take the most extreme, the most exciting cat out there, man. And I'm hardcore. And he grabs a headlock and sits in it. Genius, I thought. I thought it was tremendous. I thought it was great psychology and was able to understand what made that audience tick. And you take that away from them, and they get pissed. Because they like their hardcore guy. I want the guy who got his ear chopped off in a match. I heard that Vader took an axe out and chopped it off in the middle of a match. I don't give a shit what you say about it. And then when that guy comes down and just does, you know, an arm drag and grabs a headlock and lays in it, that's good stuff.
Oh, man. I love when you get fired up. In 95, the rumors of Mick Foley leaving ECW and coming into the WWF start to take form. And, of course, we've all heard that Jim Ross was another guy who was pushing for him to come in. And I think JR even wrote in his book that Vince told him he wanted to show him what it's like to have his heart broken, and something like, I'll bring him in, but only if we put him under a hood. You got to cover up that face. Does any of this ring a bell, or is this just telling some stories?
No, but I know this can be hard to believe. It wasn't just Jim Ross.
Right.
I don't know. I did it single-handedly. I got it all done single-handedly. I figured out everything. I had the whole deal done. Yeah. Without me, it wouldn't happen. No, there were a few of us that were really big fans of Mick Foley. And I had met Mick. Vince didn't want to meet Mick. Told me, literally, you know, keep him away from me. I don't want to meet him. Because Vince didn't think he was very bright because of the way that he worked. With the dangerous, unnecessary bumps. And having talked, when you talk to Mick, you find out very quickly that a picture does not necessarily represent, you know, what is behind that person. And Mick is an extremely intelligent individual, one of the funniest guys you'll ever want to meet, but just genuinely kind and genuinely in love with what he does. So Mick had a passion, and I had actually seen that, and I thought, we can harness this. We can make this work. And push Vic. All we wanted to do was get him in the same room. And the feeling was, much like Undertaker, who Vince was not interested in, based off of what he had seen in WCW. And just get them in the same room. If they get in the same room, I guarantee, man, they're going to start talking. And they're going to find a similar commonplace. And the rest will be history. And that's exactly what happened. You know, and Vince kept asking, what's his name? Mick. Yeah, you know, Irish boy, huh? I said, yeah, it's Mick Foley. So, of course, Vince meets him. How you doing, Mike? I don't think that we could have prepared him any better with Mick. And he went right to Mike. But exactly what I thought would happen happened. They got to talking, and Vince got into that head of Mick Foley.
Right.
And realized, boy, this can be fun. The rest, as they say, is history.
Talk to us a little bit about creative services and just the evolution of this Mankind character and all the drawings and the masks and the back and forth. And how hands-on was he, and how much was he just, hey, tell me what you want me to do and I'll do that?
The creative services was given a direction of, this is what I'm looking for. We wanted to hide his face. We wanted to make him a very unique looking character. And in doing so, wanted to hide parts of him. Just didn't want to see Cactus Jack. So we wanted to hide his body. We wanted to hide portions of his face. I wanted to mess up his hair, shave parts of his hair so that it looks like he was losing his hair and parts of his body. And as time goes on, you realize it's because he's pulling it out as he talks and as he rocks, as he does all these things. And they came up with different concepts. And after talking to Mick, you know, and the name that came up was, you know, Mankind, because basically all the sins of mankind lived within the head of Mankind, the character, and that this character was to represent the dirty little secrets that mankind has that they don't want to talk about, that they don't really want to believe, that they choose to lie about. And Mankind, the character, was everything that mankind hated. Because he wasn't pretty.
Right.
But by God, was he tough. And he made sense. So I thought it was an extremely, you know, sophisticated, clever character.
Do you remember sitting with Mick and you guys sort of talking about, hey, what would this guy do here? And what would he do there? Because there's so many little things about the character. Like, he comes into one entrance music and he leaves to another exit music, and the noises he makes and the way he does the mandible claw and cradles the face near his face, so you can see both faces at the same time. And even like the rocking back and forth and pulling out his own hair. I mean, there's a lot of little nuanced stuff that he's doing with this character. And that feels like that would have been a collaborative effort. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was, you know, throw Jim Cornette into that mix as well. And, you know, Jimmy's the one that gave him the mandible claw. And it was talking about different ways to present him, that you have this frenetic entrance, but at the end, after he's gone crazy and he's demolished his opponent, now he becomes calm with the nice little piano music. And, oh no, did I hurt him? I hope I didn't hurt him. And he goes to, you know, petting his opponent as if he's sorry for what he did. The music is the trip. The music is what makes him just flip that switch back to the kind, gentle soul of mankind. And it gave him dimension. He wasn't just a sick, frenetic freak all the time. No, he built up to that to get into the ring, and that's what made him successful. But then when the music flipped, you saw, oh, he cares. Oh, what a nice man. And that was, you know, a lot of that was a big collaborative effort. I mean, everybody added their two cents, you know, from pulling the hair out to the rocking to the holding him and all of that. It was definitely a collaborative effort. And, you know, Jim Cornette, throw him in there because Jimmy helped out a lot in those nuances as well.
This is going to be the first time that we see Mick Foley working with a mask, and this isn't like a regular lucha mask. Talk to us a little bit about the mask and the way it was constructed. And were there a lot of different versions of this that you recall? Because I know, like, on the original sketches that we would see, it was almost more like a Hannibal Lecter type thing. You guys went with something a little different here.
Yeah, but I think the original was almost just a Hannibal Lecter type thing.
I got
the thing with that, a lot of times when artists get involved in things and costume designers get involved in things, they just want to look at the look. Oh, doesn't it look cool? Then I always ask, okay, when you hear this sound, what happens? Ding, ding, ding. That goddamn bell has to ring.
Right.
Can you breathe and work in that? Oh. And so the functionality of it is very important. And so it went through a lot of dimensions to get to the point where, okay, he's got to be able to breathe. We can't obstruct his mouth. We can't obstruct the nose and make it so that it's cool, but also so that, you know, he can work in it and do some crazy shit and it's not going to come off and it's not going to, you know, look crazy. It looked crazy, but it was different, man. It had to also look restraintive, as if this mask is hiding something, but more than anything, it is something to symbolize, you know, restraint on him. Because if that mask comes off, oh, holy shit, the mask makes him normal.
I got you. Now, one of the sketches we just saw had a December 1995 date, and we know that he's actually going to debut the Monday after WrestleMania 12, so that would have been April of 96. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, what happens in that little gap right there. I mean, are you guys trying to figure out, hey, what is the right story, and how do we introduce him? Or did you know right away we're putting him with The Undertaker?
You know, we first of all, we just wanted to introduce the character.
Right.
And how do you introduce the character to the masses and make them care and anticipate the arrival of Mankind? I think all of us pretty much agreed that his first logical opponent would be The Undertaker. Big guy, monster, and that people would accept that pretty readily. But more than anything, we want to get the character over. So you get the character over by doing vignettes with him that air week after week after week, and you get a little bit into the psyche that is Mankind.
So when we're talking about him working with The Undertaker, I know at this point, boy, The Undertaker has had to work through some pretty stinky creative. I mean, he was with lots of less than awesome opponents. Now he's got a guy who's willing to push the pace and the limits of what's possible. I mean, this had to be exciting for the real life Undertaker to see, wait, I'm working with that guy who did that crazy shit over in Japan and in WCW. Yeah. Give me Cactus Jack.
Funny. He didn't want to do any of that shit with him.
Right.
He really wasn't sure, you know, what Cactus brought to the table until he got in the ring with him. But I will say this, after the first time that Cactus jumped Taker and they had their brawl, Taker came back and go, we're going to have fun.
That's awesome.
Because he just felt that chemistry.
What did you and, well, I guess Vince think of his deathmatch stuff in Japan. We sort of glossed over that, but I mean, there's been rumor and innuendo that, hey, Vince was going to do something with FMW and Onita, and we're going to have some exploding stuff and blah, blah, blah. We know it never happened.
Because it was never considered.
Okay.
Onita will tell you. It's kind of like when you hear things, and this was something else came up. It's like when you hear things about Jerry Jarrett and shit. They brought me in to run the office. You know, all these things. Never happened. Never happened. Did Onita come in to meet with us about doing business back and forth? Yes, he did. Were we ever sitting there going, God, what if we had a bomb match? No, because they're the stupidest, silliest, shittiest things that pretty much most of it, anybody with half a brain has ever seen and gone, yeah, that sucked.
We got to talk about these Mankind vignettes. I know we've had a lot of fun talking about George the Rat and all that silliness.
George was the star of these.
Talk to me about how these were done. I mean, do you remember being the producer on these?
You know what, man? Cornette produced a lot of these. And yes, I was there, and they were absolutely fabulous. But it was Mick in a dungeon. Mick in a dungeon with his only friend in the whole wide world, which was George the Rat, who had extraordinarily large testicles for a rat. And that was Mick's friend. That was who Mick identified with, was the one breathing soul that cared about Mankind. Now, Mick would ask you that question, man. Did he care about Mankind? Because every once in a while, I feed him a cracker. Every once in a while, if what I've got in here is a little too tough and I just can't chew it anymore, I give it to George. He doesn't complain. He likes it. He teaches me that maybe sometimes, Mankind, it's okay. You just got to be a little more patient and chew it. You'll get it down. It's sustenance. It's good for you. And that's what helps Mankind get through the day. Is my good, close, personal friend, George. He's a rat. It gave you an insight into the soul of Mankind. And you felt for him because his only friend in the whole world was a rat in this room. And by God, when he escapes that room, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to try to be his friend, but more than likely won't understand him and will end up being his enemy. So, yeah, I think those vignettes did a really good job of telling you about the internal battles that Mankind was facing every day. And they're no different than the battles that people every day face. God, I got to go to work today. Is my boss going to be an asshole? Should I be an asshole back? Or should I just suck it up and do my job? God, I had to wait 20 minutes to get gas. It's a long line, but I saved 4 cents.
Woohoo.
I mean, you ever do that, Conrad? Sorry, off topic, but on topic. Is where you look and you go, hey, this gas is only up here $8.36 a gallon. But look, the one across the street is $8.37.
No, I've never
$8.36.
I've never priced gas, no.
A lot of people do.
No, I mean, it's a...
No, that's what I mean. A lot of people do. I'm not...
Constant conversation. I mean, I hear it all the time, but I hear it from guys who drive a $150,000 pickup truck, and I'm like, really, bro? What are we talking about?
That's my point, too. And it's like, my kids will drive 20 minutes... to go save 2 cents a gallon on gas.
Silly.
I'm like, you
blew it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those kind of lessons that you could get from Mankind in a dungeon with a rat.
I just want to give some context to where we are too. You know, he's debuting the Monday after WrestleMania 12. This is the same era where Razor Ramon and Diesel are packing up to head down to Atlanta. So there is a bit of a shuffle. You know, you've got Steve Austin coming in, WCW, then ECW, and now here he is as the ringmaster. We've also got Mick Foley coming in. He was Cactus Jack in WCW and ECW. Now he's going to be Mankind. This is an interesting time for the company, is it not? I mean, the spring of 96, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, the summer of change.
Yeah.
And it really is. It's just, you know, it's the evolution, and things are changing and everything's changing around you. And a lot of new and a lot of different. So if there was ever a ideal time to bring in a character like Mankind, this was it. Because there was a lot of new and a lot of different all around.
It's funny, too, to think, you know, like we know that he starts as Mankind and the character really evolves and we all fall in love with Mick Foley. But we know that the ringmaster, he's not long for this world. And thankfully, we didn't get stuck with Chili McFreeze or some of these other terrible names that were, you know, just on a list somewhere. But allegedly, Mason the Mutilator was a close second for Mankind. Do you recall that? Were there any other names you recall?
There were a lot of other names, you know, and as for, you know, the folklore, all this bullshit, somebody gets a list of names and they remember the silly ones. And for us, no, we're looking at names and picking out the ones that make the most sense. And usually I forget. Yeah, I forget the stupid ones, the ones that don't work. But yeah, your Chili McFreezes, you remember because of the ridiculousness of them, but never, ever in serious contention.
We got to talk a little bit about this big debut. We've mentioned a few times it was the night after WrestleMania. He's going to pick up a win here over Sparky Plug.
That's starting with Sparky Plug. His friends call him Sparky.
He's going to immediately attack The Undertaker, and he hits the big elbow off the apron to the floor after the main event segment. He's going to put the mandible claw on him. And I know the Monday after WrestleMania would become like a really big thing eventually, but this might be the first time that something pretty major wound up happening the night after a WrestleMania like this. I mean, knowing what we know now with the benefit of hindsight for Mick Foley and the WWF, when do you remember the Monday after WrestleMania sort of becoming a thing?
Probably WrestleMania 11 with Diesel and them. So really just the year before.
Right.
And that was out of, oh my God, you know, that was out of panic.
Talk to me about that camera shot. I mean, in talking to Mick Foley, he loves the way that camera angle, you know, you see him flying off the apron. Silva's doing a good job here producing, and we can see the imagery here of him flying off the apron onto the canvas. I mean, it makes it look even more devastating than if you were to look at it, you know, from regular eye level. I'm sure that's something that's discussed ahead of time. Is that a collaborative effort where he says, hey, what if, and then we're working with production? Or just talk me through how we get a really great shot like that, that really enhances it. And I think makes him a star night one.
Sometimes it's just luck, and you're getting from the perspective of the person receiving the maneuver. So if you're going to get from that perspective, you want to get down low as you can, so you can see them coming at you. And you get, again, that perspective of the competitor that's getting creamed. Sometimes it's just luck, man.
What do you think Vince's reaction to sort of night one, the first time we've seen him live and in living color? What do you think he thought of this Mankind character?
Everybody was happy. Everybody was ecstatic, man, because again, it wasn't just what he did and so on and so forth. That particular angle, it was the feeling that is hard to put into words. When Undertaker comes back and says, this is going to be fun, I'm looking forward to working with this guy. So that in and of itself is like, oh yes, we've captured lightning in a bottle. Let's go forward with this and have fun with this.
So let's talk about the first big match. You know, it's one thing to have a big moment on a house show or have some vignettes on TV or even have a fun angle to close Monday Night Raw. But it is another to be on pay-per-view against The Undertaker and get the win. The Undertaker lost very rarely in this era. Hell, ever, really. And now Mankind's first outing is not just a win, but with his finish, the mandible claw. And they got plenty of time, 18 minutes and 21 seconds. Meltzer really dug the match too. He gave it 3.25 stars. He said the Undertaker was more aggressive than usual. It was a wild and stiff match. Maybe it was a little long, but boy, what a special moment it was. I mean, nobody really expected this. Paul Bearer
expected it.
Turns on the Undertaker. Fans were shocked by the finish. What do you remember of this special moment in all three men's careers, really?
Well, what do you expect from a man who sets his place of work on fire while he's diddling the owner's wife and setting up the oldest son of the owner and stealing his youngest son? Paul Bearer is a man that cannot be trusted. Now, a handsome man, obviously a ladies' man that women just couldn't keep their hands off of. But, of course, if you're Undertaker and Paul Bearer sees a prettier, new, shiny object, he's going to go there. Because he saw Mankind as a younger, pliable version of the Undertaker. And by pliable, I mean someone that he can take and mold into something that is benefiting Paul Bearer. It's pretty gross when you think about it.
Who do you think, or how was that idea first presented? Who deserves credit for the idea of let's have Paul Bearer turn? And then what were people thinking? I mean, was Paul comfortable with it? Was the Undertaker comfortable with it?
I think the idea, well, it was a collaborative effort, but it was the idea being that Undertaker needed to kind of, as a babyface, be out on his own. And having a manager, and especially a manager like Paul Bearer, was holding him back as a babyface. If you have Paul Bearer turn his back on Undertaker, it gives instant credibility to whoever it is that he's going with. Hence, Mankind. And that was, you know, absolutely. It was just timing. It was the right time.
It was a special moment, man. And we're off to the races. I mean, we've made a guy now. I mean, he's just stepped right into the Undertaker's lore, and they're going to have some fun rematches all across the house show loops, lots of television segments, but maybe the most memorable rematch of this period, before we get to some maybe silliness, is SummerSlam, because we do a match that I guess in theory is on Mick Foley's home turf. One of the big concepts behind this Mankind character is he's always in the boiler room. So we're going to have a boiler room brawl at SummerSlam 96. And we've talked a little bit about this match before. I know it was a challenge for the live audience. I think it was perhaps filmed the night before. And there's some stuff in there that still holds up. I mean, this is really one of the first times we saw a match like this in the WWE. What'd you think of it at the time? And do you think it holds up all these years later?
I thought it was great at the time. I thought it was very different. It was unique. It was a different presentation that people could, you know, get inside, and it was a gimmick match in a gimmick environment, but you could also give them the finish. You could also go out and be able to give them the finish in the arena. So it was, I thought it was a hell of a match. They busted their butts in there, and I thought it paid off in the end, because while you're in the arena and you're having to watch this match on a screen for the majority of it, you still got the finish out in front of the people. So that was something that that was special in and of itself as well.
So as a reminder, Mankind is going to beat the Undertaker and turn on him, or have Paul Bearer turn on him in June. In August, we get the Boiler Room Brawl. In September, Mick Foley continues to impress. They peg Mankind to be the opponent for the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Shawn had become the world champ earlier in the year, beating Bret Hart at WrestleMania 12. And now we're looking for, well, a heel factory of sorts for opponents for him. And we've got one. And the result is a fantastic match. One of my all-time favorites, one of Mick's all-time favorites. He holds it in very high regard. In Your House, Mind Games. And they say over in the UFC that styles make fights. What'd you think of this presentation of the Heartbreak Kid and Mankind at In Your House, Mind Games?
I think it was one of the best matches Shawn Michaels has ever had. And probably at the time, without a doubt, one of the best matches that Mick Foley had ever had in his entire career. This was unexpected. This was something that people look at and they see Mankind and Shawn Michaels, and it's the Beauty and the Beast. You are a little bit afraid if Shawn Michaels is your favorite and that's your hero, that he's in danger here. He's in danger here because this guy beat The Undertaker and this guy is unorthodox as hell. So there were a lot of things in this match that people had never seen before. And it was done. There was even the spot that was put in where, you know, for just for shits and giggles that, you know, I'm embarrassed to say that we even put the spot in, but it was, people were so in an uproar. When I say people, you know, the people that read the dirt sheets, that Shawn Michaels would cuss Vader. Oh my God. Because Vader screwed up a spot. So we put in a screwed up spot, but it was not screwed up because it was planned and it was absolutely perfect. But had Shawn kind of go off on Mankind and have a moment in there that was for this very small audience, which is why I'm not crazy about it, because it's catering to the smallest denominator of audiences of people that read the dirt sheets and live and breathe by that stuff. But this match was believable, and it was exciting. It was just so great that they were able to go out and have that crowd. Philadelphia, very difficult crowd, man, because if you don't give them what they want, they're going to let you know. And I thought that it was just one of the best, goes down as one of the best matches of all time, too.
So that begs the question, why didn't we do more of it?
Like, if I don't know, man. You know, it was, we were moving on.
Yeah.
And we were going somewhere else. So it was a good freebie. It was a one-off. And I don't think people thought that it was going to be nearly as good as it was. So you already have these plans in place to do on down the road. And it's like, God, I'd like to get another bite of that.
We know what's next for Mick. You said we're moving on. We're moving on to Buried Alive the very next month after working with the world champion. Well, now he might be buried live on
Alive.
Paper. Alive.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. October 1996. Foley gets another big win over The Undertaker again. But this time we add something else to the act that doesn't really wind up working out. But, hey, maybe it was worth a try. We debuted Terry Gordy as the Executioner. Was the original plan here to build like a little stable around Paul Bearer? I mean, I know that eventually it's going to become like Mankind and Vader, but would it have been, you know, Mankind, the Executioner, and others? What was the original idea, do you think?
The original idea was to have Paul Bearer have someone else in a stable, somebody that could go out and get beat.
I see.
And Terry Gordy was thought of. Terry Gordy was not the Terry Gordy of yesteryear. Terry had already suffered some complications, whether I think he had had a stroke at that point. But Terry wasn't himself. It wasn't the Terry Gordy of yesteryear. And, you know, that's what I think everybody wanted. But it's like, let's put a hood on him so that it's not Terry Gordy and that people aren't expecting a Terry Gordy match. And that they're not expecting a Terry Gordy here. And unfortunately, it was a disappointment because Terry just did not have all his faculties about him. And, you know, hindsight being 2020, never should have done it. But he had gotten cleared and he was, you know, quote, physically able to perform. But I don't think that he was, you know, ever in a place that he was in a good place to perform, if you know what I mean. It's just, he had lost that spark and he had lost a lot of, his intuition. He had lost a lot of his just instinct more than anything.
This sort of becomes an opportunity to maybe rebrand or reimagine or just develop this Undertaker character a little more. We know he's going to come back and ascend down from the top of Madison Square Gardens and look a little Batman-y at Survivor Series 1996. He's got the black.
Oh, no, that was Pirate. That was Pirate Undertaker.
Okay. I mean, it looks like bat wings, but all right.
Yeah, it does. But when you look at his face, he kind of looks like a pirate.
Did you have that sort of, you know, evolution in mind before you booked the Buried Alive match, or was it a function of, well, he did die when we buried him, so he could come down and be someone else, or was that all just a happy accident?
Well, we always tried to change his look up. I mean, he's the Undertaker, and we would change it up with splash of color here, splash of color there, change something up in his gear, what have you, change his hair. He had the teardrop for a while, you know, makeup on, makeup off. There was always an evolution of the Undertaker. And this was simply going to be the next evolution of the Undertaker. And that's what it was.
We know that Taker finally gets the win back over Mankind at Survivor Series in Madison Square Garden. At that point, did it feel like, hey, we've done this to death? This feud started in April. Here we are in November. Because they're both kind of, maybe kind of gonna go their own separate ways from here. Was Undertaker tired of it? Were we just out of ideas, or was it just time to move on?
He'd seen a lot of it by this point. It's time to give it a little bit of a rest.
Let's just remind everybody, they wrestled at the June pay-per-view, and then they're going to wrestle again at the August pay-per-view, and then at the October pay-per-view, and now the November pay-per-view. So we've had four pay-per-view matchups with these folks in just 7 months. And on the other side of this Undertaker feud, Mankind sort of just treading water for a little bit. Now, he does get to work with Terry Funk a lot at the Royal Rumble in San Antonio. I'm sure that was a blast for both guys. But he's really just thrown into a tag team with Vader. And Mankind's first WrestleMania moment isn't with The Undertaker. It's a tag match with Vader taking on Owen Hart and Davey Boy Smith. But it's sort of a heel versus heel tag team. And I know WrestleMania 3 and the whole card got shuffled up and changed up when Shawn tripped and lost his smile somewhere. But when you think about
WrestleMania 3,
13.
Okay. I'm sorry. Thank you. I got lost for a minute.
WrestleMania 3 happened
after WrestleMania 3.
So was there another idea before Shawn lost his smile, darn it, and everything got turned upside down?
For Mick?
Well, it just feels like heel versus heel tag team. That feels like, okay, we got to get these guys WrestleMania payday.
Hey, I mean, the answer to the question, yeah, a lot of shit got turned upside down when Shawn lost his smile. Shawn didn't perform as to what we had thought we were going to do. So, yeah, it kind of, the domino effect. It just, they start dropping. So you've got to change a lot of things and don't always have the time to do it properly. So sometimes a match is going to be ice cold and put them in there and just look at what you got. Go with star power.
Mick Foley told us that Jim Cornette offered him a match at WrestleMania against the Wild Man, Mark Mero, and Foley turned it down. Do you remember that? I mean, Mick was pretty honest in saying, you know, he came in for a much smaller contract, as did Austin, and they too had just left WCW, just like Mark Mero had over there. Of course, he was Johnny B. Badd. Johnny B. Badd came in on a better contract, and Mick maybe took that personally, but it wasn't Mark's fault. Like, that's not something you can hold against the guy, but still, he was able to be honest with us and say, I probably should have handled that a little better. But the idea of turning down a singles match at WrestleMania just seems crazy, right?
Yeah. But I think he had a better match with Owen and Davey Boy.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and the other thing, you know, nobody, I'm sure you didn't ask the follow-up question to Mick. Hey, Mick, how much did you make that year?
Right.
Now, how much you had your contract was for?
Yeah.
How much did you make that year, Mick? And I think if you were to compare it to Mark Merrill, that I think Mick might have been on the better side of that.
Of course, we know coming out of WrestleMania, The Undertaker is the WWF champion. So that maybe was something we didn't plan for when we were first thinking about WrestleMania 13, but it's a good sign for Mankind considering their history. And who better to be The Undertaker's first challenger at the following pay-per-view, In Your House, Revenge of the Taker? It's Mankind and The Undertaker. Oh, no, it's not. That honor goes to Bret Hart and Steve Austin. But Taker still wins his match clean, and then he's going to light Paul Bearer's face on fire.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Why are you that laughing happened. So hard? Why are you laughing so hard? Come on.
Nah, it took a fucking can of gasoline and a blowtorch and 40 barrels of oil to get that thing to light.
I mean, there were some fireball issues for sure.
Uh-huh.
Not an easy day at the office. Foley's going to find himself working with a young upstart who, man, is just maybe not having the best experience. Having debuted at Survivor Series, here we are now in May of 1997, so we're 6 months in. And fans aren't really behind Rocky Maivia. But this will be the first time we get to see Mankind and Rock. This is
wouldn't be the last, though, by God.
Isn't it fun to look back and see that's what it looks like? Show that again, Silva. That this is what it looks like in 1997. But just 2 years later, these guys are battling for the world title and having brutal, devastating matches. Neither one of the characters look like this at this point.
Yeah.
But that's just like that, and it changed. Isn't that crazy to think about how fast things were changing?
I think that may have been the last time that Rocky Maivia was Rocky Maivia in that match. I think damn close to it, but that may have been the last time he was Rocky Maivia. The crowd popped when Mankind beat him.
He's the bad guy.
Right.
Eating the white meat baby face and fans want none of it. It's amazing. I mean, what a great
story. That's great. I love it. Man, Conrad, you know, I was telling somebody this the other day. I was sitting there, I was very pensive, and somebody was like, "You okay?" Yeah, I said, "No." I said, "You know, I'm sitting here just in awe of myself from the standpoint I've never had to work, and I have, but you know what I mean. It's I love what I do, and good, bad, indifference. I love what I do. So it, and the funny thing is I was just asked about that match the other day on Tuesday.
Small world it is. We've got Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation and Steve Austin really taking shape. Paul Bearer starts doing promos, talking about the Undertaker's brother. Mankind's just sort of on the outside of all this. But then something magical happens in the summer of 97. There's a series of sit-down interviews that JR would do. And we got one with the real-life Dustin Runnels and his wife, Terry. Of course, we've seen them on television as Goldust and Marlena. And now it's time for Mick Foley, a.k.a. Mankind, to sit down with good old JR. And we see the Dude Love footage for the first time and hear that story. And Mick has said and even wrote that these interviews are the ones that maybe sold Vince McMahon on him as a performer and this as a character. What do you remember of these sit-down interview segments that aired on Monday Night Raw?
Classic. Absolutely classic. Because you got to take a monster and make him human.
Yes.
The the Dude Love stuff was we were in Toronto, Sean, Mick, myself, I think Hunter was there. I think Taker was there. And the question came up about, you know, Mick Foley as a kid, you know, and we wanted to be a wrestler, and Mick laughed and said, I wanted to be you, Sean. And he's like, well, he goes, I wanted to be the, you know, the chick magnet, you know, he goes, I was Dude Love. I was this guy. Hey, that's gimmick infringement. And he says, no, I got tapes of it. You know, I've got all this stuff. So we got him to find those tapes and send us those tapes. And the rest, as they say, is history, because it was, you got to see the child, if you will, with a dream, and what that dream was, and how badly he wanted women to love him, and for him to be the one that the women love and the men hate. Dude Love. And it was magical. It was great. You know, this is where he did the stupid shit, jumping off the roof of the house onto a mattress. And, you know, you saw the fearlessness of him then as a kid. And now it's, you know, he's an adult. He's in the business. He's doing it. But he ain't Dude Love. He's not the chick magnet. Oh, no. And that was, you know, the moment of going, God, can you know, what's behind all of this mankind stuff? You know, what is it? And it's Dude Love. It's Mick Foley, who just wanted to be somebody that was different, who might have had a hard childhood, who might have eaten worms as a kid. JR, you ever kiss a girl? Well, no, because what girl wants to kiss somebody with worm breath? And it's so hard. You know, you want to laugh as you're sitting there watching this, but you're captivated because he took something that could be humorous and made it very real. It made you feel for him. Because he was that kid on the playground that nobody else wanted to play with. He was that kid on the playground that maybe wore glasses and would sit out there and put his glasses on an ant with the sun until the ant caught on fire. He was the one that everybody made fun of. But he was also the one that would go and pick up the girls' books when they dropped and walk them to their class. They didn't thank him. They just took their books away from him and they ran from him because they were a little scared because he was different. And this interview allowed you to get into that psyche. A little bit of it is, man, you know what? I knew a guy like that. Or God forbid, that's me. Whatever it is, everybody could relate to that. Everybody could relate to what it would be like to wish you were somebody else, but never able to achieve that. And here, you know, was Mick Foley doing what he always dreamed he would do. But he's somebody else. He's a reflection of mankind and all the things that he has pent up in his head for all these years as a kid to adulthood is now coming out tenfold. And it's society's fault. It's that little girl who wouldn't kiss him when he brought her books to the class. He wasn't looking for a tongue hockey session. He just wanted a peck on the cheek. But he was gross. They challenged him to eat worms. He did. Then he just did it to disgust them. And all this got told in a very real, very empathetic sit-down interview where he captivated the audience and people were like, oh, shit. This makes sense. and you kind of feel for the guy.
So let's talk about Mankind, man. He's here in the King of the Ring, 1997. Now, he wasn't in the tournament in 96. He just beat The Undertaker and took his manager. It was a special moment. But now, here we are, and we've got, I guess that was SummerSlam where that happened. Whatever. King of the Ring 97, though, is going to be a time to crown Triple H. And there's been lots of rumor and innuendo that he was supposed to be the guy who got the nod in 96. But when it happens in 97, well, Mankind is no longer just a straight heel. I mean, he's become a babyface. He's become likable because of these promos and vignettes and interviews that we've been seeing with Jim Ross. We're starting to see a different side of him. But that's always been kind of confusing too. Like the whole sympathetic babyface thing about the worms and being picked on and all that and wanting to be Dude Love. Like you feel bad for him, but then at the end he attacks Jim Ross. So that's kind of heel stuff.
Is it?
I love
heel stuff to who?
Is this tweener behavior? Is that sort of a hallmark of the Attitude Era where it is a little more shades of gray? It's not as black and white.
It is shades of gray, but I do think that attacking Jim Ross probably was that step towards being babyface, because during this time you have such a anti-authority feeling. And Jim Ross definitely was that authority and that establishment figurehead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was the guy that was play-by-play guy. He was the guy that you don't touch. So by touching him, that kind of helped push Mankind over the edge to that baby face. And immediately, once he got Jim down and took Jim out, he was very concerned. And he's going to need some help. 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 Jimmy's going to need some help here. You know, just classic stuff.
It works to the point where when he comes out, does his entrance at King of the Ring, he gets some cheers. And they keep it going the next month, Canadian Stampede. We reviewed this in the archives, one of the best shows of all time. Go out of your way to see it.
You're
welcome. And Mankind and Triple H actually open the show. They set the tone maybe for the rest of the show because it's a crazy brawl. It ends in a double count out, and cameras actually follow them and show them brawling throughout the arena for the rest of the night. I mean, they're outside and everywhere else. I like this feud. And when you really think about what Foley has done in his first year, really, he's got this fantastic feud with The Undertaker, and it feels like we're along the way, we have interesting matches with Shawn and teaming with Vader and taking on Owen and Davey Boy. We have a couple of matches with Funk. We work with a young Rocky Maivia. But his next real feud, I mean, this is it with Triple H. Man, you want to talk about the next generation. Again, we're in 97. So on the other channel, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and the NWO are getting hot, hot, hot. We got to have this new generation, pardon the pun, really step up. And these guys did in a major way. I mean, they were made for each other, Triple H and Mankind, no?
Yes, absolutely. And this is where, you know, the narrative and everything gets lost is, man, we were getting our butts kicked on television as far as ratings. WCW had emerged, and they had emerged and were beating us. They were beating us regularly and consecutively. We were hanging in there, though. We were hanging in there, and we were, while theirs were going up, ours were going up. The difference was we were a live event business, and our live events were continually, we were setting records on live events, continually going up with gates and everything. The groundswell was taking place at this time. It would take a year and a half for us to get back to where television ratings were now doing better. But the live events, man, they were already starting to take off. And you saw that progression every week, every market. It wasn't, oh, hey, we did a good house here. No, it was consistent and it was steady. And WCW touted their television events, and deservedly so. The fact of the matter is that when they tried to run live events, when they advertised the NWO, first time in, they would do good. But then half the card wouldn't show up. And people learned this and just got disgusted with it and had no faith in WCW going forward. But it was guys like Mick Foley and it was guys like Triple H, and that issue, that program all the way through, that was something people could dig their teeth into, and they were paying to go see that in live events. So all these things, it was an underneath. It was Stone Cold Steve Austin coming up and boiling up underneath. And it was a good time. It was frustrating because we weren't winning in the ratings. But it was good in the live events.
Let's talk a little bit about what's happening behind the scenes in the WWF. The summer of 97 is where things get to a boil with Brett and Sean. They get in a fight backstage. Sean's going to leave the company for a bit. Steve Austin is a tag team champion with Sean when all of this is happening. And well, with Sean out, Austin needs a partner. And he continually turns down Mankind's request. But while he's defending the tag titles against Owen and Davey Boy, we look at the Jumbotron or the Titantron, and we see Dude Love make his debut. How happy and proud were you and Mick and everyone to see Dude Love make his television debut?
It all came full circle. San Antonio, Texas, man. It was great. And I was happy for Mick. He finally got to realize that childhood dream. Not everybody gets to do that. And on the biggest stage of them all. So yeah, I was happy for Mick. I thought it was pretty damn cool.
It's super cool. And believe it or not, Austin and Dude Love win the tag team titles. Dude is very over. I mean, fans absolutely love this. And of course, in talking to Mick over the years, he said that, well, eventually he realized there's just not much to this character. There's only so much dancing in the corner you can do with a little fake in the knees and all that. Did you think that Dude Love would have a short shelf life as well? Or did you think, hey, this could be the new gimmick going forward?
I looked at it as it could definitely be a new personality when you wanted to bring it out for Mankind. I thought that it was something that, you know, during this time, this was also where we're looking at it going, we got Cactus Jack in this whole menagerie. So what really hadn't emerged yet was Mick Foley. You know, we had done Mankind. We had done Dude Love. Wanted to get to Cactus Jack. But you think about it, we really hadn't gotten Mick Foley yet. So the feeling was, that, yeah, man, Dude Love would be great. I don't see him doing it every week, but we did think that Dude Love could be something that is one of the many personalities of Mankind.
So we know SummerSlam 97 is going to be a major moment for Mick. He's going to be wrestling Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. They're going to open the show in one of the last big blue steel cage matches. I know that we would see this cage return, but I think in subsequent times, it might be black. But the big blue cage here, Mankind climbing the cage, tearing open his top to show that heart tattoo of Dude Love on his chest, jumping down on Hunter with his own version, I guess, of a super fly splash that we had heard so much about in these interviews with JR. It's a big win for Mick, but maybe the bigger news is later in this same show, is when Austin's hit with a tombstone by Owen Hart and he winds up injured. And that means the tag titles are going to have to be vacated. Talk to me a little bit about what it meant to you, you think, to Mick and this character to have him have his own Superfly moment. But then, you know, how disappointing is it that we don't get to really pay off whatever the plan was going to be with this Austin Dude Love tag team title run?
Well, for Mick used to go with his friends and hitchhike to Madison Square Garden to see the monthly live events in Madison Square Garden. And Mick was there the night that Jimmy Snuka did the famous dive off the top of the cage onto Don Morocco. And that was a big deal to Mick, man. That was one of those moments where it's like, yeah, yes, that's what I want to do, man. That's what I want to do. And for Mick to be able to recreate it in his own version and his own homage to Lovely Brother, Jimmy Snuka, then yeah, it was pretty cool. I think for Mick, man, that was one of those moments that he will never, ever forget. We were worried, can you do it? Mick's knees and hips and everything else were not in the same kind of shape that Superfly's were. But Mick did it, and I think that it was incredible, and it was one of those moments that people will never forget, and I dare say it's got to be in the top five greatest moments in Mick Foley's career.
And believe it or not, Mick Foley is actually in the ring as Dude Love when Austin finally hit that first stunner on WWF management. Of course, it was Jim Ross. I'm sure seeing Dude Love in the ring and Austin stunning JR, boy, you had fun with that then, now, forever.
It's always fun to stun somebody that is an authority figure.
And how about the infamous Madison Square Garden moment? Cactus Jack finally makes his WWF debut. It's going to be in a Falls Count Anywhere match against Triple H. But the reaction to Jack coming on screen is one of the bigger ones. This is something you guys spent a lot of time with on the Titantron. We would see Dude Love having a conversation with Mankind, and all of a sudden, they introduce Cactus Jack. How proud of you, or how proud were you of the production and just the delivery of this? I mean, this was a major moment for Mick, for Triple H, for the WWE, really.
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it, because this one was a labor of love. This one was the point where you have someone interviewing themselves and is someone else. And then, you know, but wait, there's somebody else that lives in here too. And you bring out the one that's never supposed to really come out of that deep, dark recesses of your mind. And that was Cactus Jack. Cactus Jack was the last resort because he was the most dangerous. He was the one that was not controllable. And here he was, live and in the flesh.
We know that it's a special match. Foley gets the win with a pile driver through a table. The legend of Cactus Jack in the WWF is born. And we're going to stop it right there because there's so much more that we need to talk about Mick Foley. And well, we'd have like a 30-hour show if we covered his entire career here. Let's do a few questions. SH4037 over on YouTube, which you can be a part of, all things Bruce Pritchard, or at somethingtowrestle.com. So be sure to hit the subscribe button and we'll go live sooner rather than later. But SH4037 wants to know, which rivalry do you think had the biggest impact? Foley with Taker, with Orton, or with Hunter? I mean, he had some great matches with all three, some great stories with all three. Which one do you think is your favorite of all?
I think Undertaker, because Undertaker put Mankind on the map. If the Undertaker, the first program with Undertaker had failed and not done as well as it did, there wouldn't have been a Randy Orton or a Hunter.
Edman 1820 says, Mick has recently announced that he canceled his plans for one final match. What are your thoughts on that decision or why he thought it was a good idea in the first place?
So he's not doing one last match.
He's not.
Thank God. I think that's a smart move. I think that, you know, I don't know what it is about this business. Everybody thinks they've got one more match. And there have been people that have had these incredible send-offs only to completely, you know, crap all over them by going in and having one more match years later. The audience, and this is my opinion, the audience wants to remember their favorites as they were. And they want to see him go out on top up here in his best. Usually when you're going out, you're not what you were when you were younger. But hopefully you're at a point where you're comfortable going out. You still have something left in the tank. and you go out. But when you come back 10, 15, 20 years later, whatever the hell it may be, and you do one more match, and people look at you and they feel sad. And I don't think that that's how I know that's not how most want to be remembered. They want you to remember them in their prime. So you take that away from the audience when you come out and you're not in the shape that you were 20 years ago and you can't do the things that you used to do. So I'm happy that Mick is decided against it, because Mick Foley, at whatever age he is now, he can't do the things he used to do 20 years ago. Can't do the things that he used to do 5 years ago, probably. And I think he's been retired longer than that, but you get the point. It's a disappointment to see guys come back out and do, well, I got one more left in me. And they see him and they go, let them remember what it was. Go ahead, and it's okay to ride off into the sunset. Still be around doing something else, but not trying to relive your glory days of being in the ring and doing all the things that you used to do, because by God, Father Time don't do no jobs.
Undefeated. We had a lot of fun today talking about Mick Foley. We're going to keep it going. In the coming weeks, we're going to be talking about Bad Blood 2004. It had a Hell in a Cell match with Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Chris Benoit. We would also see Kane in there with Chris Benoit. We got Edge and Eugene and Jonathan Coachman on pay-per-view. That was a real match. Can't wait to bust Bruce's balls about that. Oh, and how about in the coming weeks too, another Ask Bruce Anything. We had so many questions. We want to get more of those in. If you've got a question for Bruce, the best place to ask it is right now on this video, somethingtowrestle.com on YouTube. That's where we're soliciting for questions, and we'll hit you right here on Something to Wrestle. Tell your friends that Something to Wrestle, after all those years on Friday, is now a Monday show. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on the notifications bell so you know when we've got a new show out. Bruce, I don't know what I'm looking forward to more, busting your balls about Eugene or doing Ask Bruce Anything. I know which one you're looking forward to, though.
What are you going to do to my balls again?
Bust them.
Why do you want to do that?
It's just fun. Just something to do. Something to pass the time.
Okay.
By the way, if your business targets men 25 to 54 years old, no better place to advertise than right here on Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Find out how affordable it is at advertisewithbruce.com. Also want to remind you that we got some new merch and some new swag available for you at somethingtowrestleshirts.com. It's not just shirts. We got doot fanny packs and everything in between. Check it out at somethingtowrestleshirts.com. But one more time, if you've got a question about Bad Blood 04, or you've got a question that about any wrestling, or not even non-wrestling, maybe you want to talk to Bruce about his Hall of Fame karate black belt status, that you can do that. Somethingtowrestle.com. Bruce, you got a big trip coming up, don't you?
Yeehaw! Back to Scotland.
When was the last time you were there?
With you, right?
Yeah, I think so. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, looking forward to
Glasgow.
Coming your way, man.
Glasgow, can't wait.
Any final words for us today, Bruce?
Sometimes Jimmy Jam came along. Those were the best times, now they're gone. Don't forget to go and check that out. Free Bird Road on YouTube, because I want to get the numbers up just to drive Michael Hayes crazy.
I love it. Check it out. Free Bird Road. We will link it in the description for today's show. Thousands of people watched it last week. We hope
that I know. That's great, right?
And we'll be back next week, busting Bruce's balls, taking your questions. Hit them right now. SomethingToWrestle.com.
Rock on.